From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, how to influence people. Here's what's happening. People who are fully vaccinated against coronavirus no longer need to wear masks while indoors or outdoors or physical distancing in either large or small gatherings, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky. She made that announcement during a White House COVID-19 briefing. Fully vaccinated individuals are still advised to wear masks while in crowded indoor settings, such as while on public transportation and in hospitals, prisons, or homeless shelters. Airlines will still require you to wear a mask for now. HBO has canceled this week's episode of Real Time with Bill Maher after the comedian tested positive for COVID-19. Maher, who is vaccinated and asymptomatic, tested positive during the premium cable network's weekly testing ahead of the show. Let's check in with Christian Wild, author of My Heart book. Christian, masks, what do you think?
Well, you know, George, since this COVID experience began some 2 years ago, and you and I have talked about it many times, we've seen the rules change over and over, and now the CDC and Dr. Fauci have encouragingly said those among us who have been fully vaccinated with both shots, just like you just reported, no longer need to wear our masks in public or private. But then he also went on to say that if we're in a crowded situation, we should definitely wear the mask. If I may, George, there is one obvious potential loophole in this advice in protecting ourselves, our families, and our friends. How would you or I or your audience know who among us has actually got?
I was exactly going to ask you that. How do we know if somebody just takes his mask off, has never been vaccinated?
Yeah, and who among us has not gotten any shots at all and could possibly keep us as a nation from attaining herd immunity and ending this pandemic for now and forever? Now, there is this from Allison Arwadi. She's the public health commissioner in Chicago. She said they've had 500 breakthrough cases among those who had completed a two-shot series, and five people have died from that. So keep our wits about us as we make our own decisions regarding ourselves, our friends, and our families, and let's just hope for the best.
Christian's website, myheartbook.com. It's been revealed that Colonial Pipeline, the company, paid nearly $5 million to Eastern European hackers, contradicting reports earlier this week that the company had no intention of paying the extortion fee to help restore the country's largest fuel pipeline, which affected a lot of states. The company paid the hefty ransom in difficult-to-trace cryptocurrency within hours, apparently, after the attack, underscoring the immense pressure faced by the Georgia-based operator to get gasoline and jet fuel flowing again to major cities along the eastern seaboard. It's going to take a couple more days to get back to normalcy, but apparently they paid the ransom. The Israeli military said that it had deployed air and ground troops within the Gaza Strip to battle the Hamas terrorist group, which has been launching rocket barrages since Monday. Israel had been retaliating with airstrikes, but the ground attacks marks another major escalation in what authorities were already describing as the largest clash between Israelis and Palestinian militants since 2014. I had an opportunity to email Uri Geller, the mentalist who lives in Israel, just to ask him how he and his family are doing. He sends back this email a few hours ago. Hi, George. Hundreds of rockets are flying into different towns and cities as I write this. Don't really know if we are safe. We have not had any air raid shelter to go to. We are right now hiding in the lower floor bathroom. Thanks for asking. Much energy, Uri. Uri Geller. Target, by the way, has announced that it will temporarily stop selling trading cards of both sports and Pokemon variety in stores following a recent violent dispute at one of its locations. Last week, a Target in Wisconsin was locked down after a man was physically assaulted by four others over sports trading cards. The space race appears set for a relaunch following news that Russia is to send an actor and director to the International Space Station in October with the ambition of making the first feature film in space. The crew, scheduled to begin their expedition on the 5th of October, while on the space station, they could encounter some fellow filmmakers. Tom Cruise and the director Doug Liman were also due to travel there in October to make a movie, but we don't know who will get there first. Kevin Randall's with us with his weekly UFO report. Hey, Kevin, what do you have for us?
Well, good evening, George.
Hey.
It's been a wild one.
Okay.
Ending on social media was the tale of a UFO crash near San Antonio, New Mexico in 1945. The story is that two youngsters searching for a lost cow heard a loud rumble, saw a flash of light and then a cloud of dust and smoke. They approached that area, saw a downed craft and three small, thin creatures. They told their parents, who returned with them a couple of days later and saw the craft, but not the aliens. Eventually, the military did arrive and cleaned up the area and removed the craft, but not before the boys managed to take samples of the debris. Jacques Vallée and Paola Harris are coming out with a book detailing the story. I'm skeptical of aspects of the case, but want to see what the investigation has turned up. I will note here that the pictures of the two pieces of the debris have been published on the Coast to Coast AM website. I have a link to those photographs as well as more detailed information about this at my blog at www.kevinrandall.blogspot.com. Also gaining traction this week was a couple of statements by former Nevada Senator Harry Reid. He is reported to have said, and I quote, "I was told for decades that Lockheed had some of these retrieved materials. As I tried to get, as I recall, classified approval by the Pentagon to have me look at the stuff, they would not give me that approval. I don't know what the numbers were, what kind of classification it was, but they would not give me that," end quote. I need to make it clear here that Senator Reid did not see the debris himself, and although he has been to Area 51 a number of times, he saw nothing to indicate alien spacecraft were housed there. Kurt Collins reported Senator Reid clarified earlier statements about this debris by saying, quote, "I never believed Lockheed had anything in that regard, even though a lot of people believe that. I don't," end quote. As to whether any UFO fragments are stored away in some of the governmental or contractors' warehouses, Reid said he doubted it, and he said, quote, "I never heard of anything other than some conspiratorialists, so I don't think they're credible that there are things from space there," end quote. However, I'm reminded of Senator Barry Goldwater, who talked of a blue room hidden at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base where much of the recovered material was stored. According to what Senator Goldwater said, on many occasions when he approached Air Force General Curtis LeMay about permission to visit the blue room, he was told no and never asked me again. I have a letter from Barry Goldwater sent to Kent Jeffrey in which Goldwater confirms that information. I have the actual original letter. I'll post that to my blog as well. Awesome. These stories go back for decades, and while we have hints about the level of secrecy, it is only recently that we have seen how high that secrecy extends. When Jimmy Carter was president-elect, he attempted to learn more about UFOs and asked then-director of Central Intelligence, George H.W. Bush, about UFOs. Bush told Carter that he was not yet president, and he refused to provide that information. I explore that in UFOs in the Deep State, providing the details of that refusal and how such things are managed by the Deep State in Washington, D.C. today. Now we look forward to the release of the UFO UAP report scheduled for next month, though I have heard it has been delayed. I have little hope that we'll learn anything new about UFOs or that there will be anything exciting in these revelations. I look for it being Condon 2.0, which is just another attempt to kill interest in UFOs by suggesting there is nothing to them. It's just an appeal to authority that doesn't answer any of the questions we have. And that's what I have for tonight, George.
All right, my friend. We'll talk to you next week. Kevin Randall, he's one of the best UFO investigators out there. In a moment, we're going to be talking with Dan Cummings. He's an incredible comic. He's nationally well-known. But what we're talking about? Well, stick around and find out in a moment when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We've got a special guest for you for the next couple hours. Dan Cummings has enjoyed an impressive 20-year career as a comic With a resume that includes numerous late-night television appearances, 5 comedy albums, and several Comedy Central specials, before becoming a prolific podcaster. Now, through his Scared to Death podcast, Dan and his wife, Lindsay, have explored more than 200 reportedly true stories on poltergeist activity, shadow people, possessions, mysterious disappearances, UFO abductions, demonic attachment, and so much more. And we're going to talk about that on Coast to Coast. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me, George. I appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to this. And I've got to ask you, when you were a little boy, were you funny?
I was funny to a small group of friends, but I was never the class clown, you know, kind of making everyone laugh in the whole class.
What steered you into the comedy field?
You know, it was just on a whim. I didn't know what to do with myself after college. I grew up in a very small town. There's only about 300 people there now, Riggins, Idaho. We didn't even have a stoplight. There was no entertainment. You didn't know anybody who was not blue collar. I watched Saturday Night Live as a kid, but never thought of things like that as an actual job possibility. And I went to college, got a psychology degree, didn't know what I wanted to do after my bachelor's degree, bounced around a couple different jobs real fast. And then my ex-wife, fiance at the time, she had heard about a comedy club in town. I didn't even know it was there and just suggested I go to the open mics. And then I was just hooked. It was just, you know, more fun than the other things I was doing. And I liked, you didn't have to rely on anyone else to pursue it.
Well, you were comfortable with a live audience too, I bet.
Yeah, you know, I had done some, I was in a silly little band in college and some other things and never, maybe to a fault, just never cared about getting stage fright. Maybe I was just too okay with kind of, making a fool out of myself.
Well, you've done a great job in the comedy field. I mean, you're all over the map, which is just amazing. So how did this evolution occur where you're podcasting now, Scared to Death? I assume you were always interested in this field, but how did you make that switch?
Well, you know, a lot of comics, they grew up, you know, really idolizing Johnny Carson or Jay Leno or David Letterman or Conan or somebody. You know, they really wanted to be on one of the late night shows, or they really, you know, wanted to be George Carlin or Tennyson or Dane Cook or whatever. And I just didn't. When I was a kid, you know, I loved sci-fi and I loved horror. Stephen King was the first author that I really got into. I was probably way too young when I started reading him. I was 7 or 8 and I was already reading Stephen King books and reading everyone I could get my hands on, you know, staying up late, sneaking on the TV and watching late night Cinemax and Showtime. And Tales of the Crypt, you know, HBO, anything horror and sci-fi has always just captivated me. And, you know, when other comics were going hanging out at the clubs after the shows, you know, when I started, I was going back and watching The X-Files or some documentary series. So that stuff's always been more of my passion. I can do comedy and I like comedy, but when it's my time, I like to watch this other stuff.
Yeah, your career is much like mine, Dan. When I was 11, I had my first out-of-body experience. Went to the library and stumbled into the occult section and found the book on astral projection. And I went, my gosh, this is what happened to me. And then my mom was into UFOs and things like that. She brought me home a book called We Are Not Alone by Walter Sullivan, who used to be the New York Times science writer, whose theory was that there are extraterrestrial races out there all over the place. And I was hooked. I couldn't stop. So like you, it happens when you're a kid.
Yeah, I remember my book. It was Charles Berlitz's World of Strange Phenomena.
Yes, great book.
It was such a fascinating book and spontaneous combustion and, like you said, astral projection and the possibilities of all these things that when I read it, I'd never heard of. No one in my family talked about it, and it was just so fascinating. And then, you know, 10 years later, I watched The X-Files and like, oh, my God, this is the greatest show that's ever been made. And I've just been hooked ever since. And Scared to Death, the podcast we do now, it's just such a fun way to really explore the paranormal, where we do, you know, so many stories each week that even if you don't believe all of them, if you believe just one of them, it just makes the world so much more magical.
It sure does. And we're going to get into a lot of these different areas that you have been exploring, that we've explored on this program, and find out your thoughts on some of these. But you even go deeper, though. You truly have done a remarkable job probing the JFK assassination, and you go a little deeper than a lot of people.
Oh, on Time Suck, yeah. Yeah, Time Suck was the podcast that started all the podcasting. And that one I still do, and that's just a deep dive on one subject a week. And it's all over. Sometimes it's true crime. Sometimes it's a historical figure. But often it's cults, conspiracies. We did a two-parter on JFK. I am fascinated with that one. I think sometimes with conspiracies, people get distracted by more extreme conspiracies like Pizzagate or QAnon or these kind of things, or, you know, David Icke's kind of lizard Illuminati.
Right.
And they're pretty far out there, the moon matrix and all this, you know, Anunnaki thought manipulation and all this stuff. And they're just like, whoa, this is just crazy. But then you look at something like the JFK assassination, and if you understand the history of the Cold War and the CIA, you think, oh, there actually was strong motive for them to do this. Like, it actually made sense with their agenda to have a hand in this assassination. Like, the pieces do actually fit. That one fascinates me. A lot of the assassinations from that era fascinate me.
I've got a friend, Dan, in St. Louis, who believes every conspiracy theory you hear, everything.
Yeah,
and I keep telling him, it's not, you can't believe everything. There's smoke, of course, for a lot of these stories,
right.
And some of them are actually true, but you just can't at will believe them all. You got to investigate. You got to learn.
Yeah, and that's exactly, that, I'm with you. That's on Time Suck. That's what we do, where, you know, we approach them. And if I really think, you know, like the Denver airport is one for me, that the pieces don't fit and there's a logical explanation that's not of the occult for a lot of the things that, you know, get people riled up, then I think you lose credibility if you don't say these pieces don't fit. And I like to think then when you do point at another one, people are more likely to believe you.
I go to Denver once a month to tape our Beyond Belief television programs. And our driver always tells me these stories about the airport. But there was one where there's this huge sculpture outside of the airport,
yep,
of a horse.
Lucifer.
That's right. And apparently the horse, while it was being made, fell on the guy who was carving it and killed
him. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes. I know. So tragic. And that helps fuel the lore around that horse. You know, it gets a lot of demonic accusations.
Yeah.
But actually, the color scheme is the eyes, the red eyes, were a tribute to the artist's father who worked in like old cars, like detailing. It was something with neon. I don't have the story in front of me, but it was actually a really heartwarming thing. It was a tribute to his dad and what his dad liked artistically. And then the blue horse was a Native American legend. Of this, you know, mystical stallion that had nothing to do with, like, Judeo-Christian satanic, you know, possibilities.
Lots to talk with you about tonight, Dan. And then in our second hour, we'll open up the phone lines and let our listeners ask you a question or two about some of the things we're going to be talking about tonight. You went to Gonzaga University.
I did. I'm not Catholic, but the Jesuits, I think they're good teachers.
They are. I went to University of Detroit, which is also Jesuit. I am Catholic, but I don't go to religion all the time. But it's a great school.
Yeah. Were you a Jesuit then specifically? Like, I find that order of Catholicism fascinating, where they question so much. You know, I remember talking to some theology. There we go, professors. And at the end of the discussion, I would think, like, are they religious? Like, they're a priest.
I did have some Jesuits teach my broadcasting courses. The Father James Brown, who was had an in with CBS, and he was good. And but it's a great university too. So every time there's NCAA basketball, I bet you go wild, don't you?
Yeah, this last year was a lot of buildup for a lot of pain in the championship game. They played so well all year. And then their worst game by far was the championship. But it was still cool to see them get there. I graduated in 99, and that was the first year they really made a splash. And 2 years before that, when I was an idiotic college sophomore, we would wander in the arena just drunk in the first half, hit two you know, bleachers, rose off the floor, and just goof around and do whatever we wanted, you know, make fun of the team. I mean, nobody cared about them. And then all of a sudden, they just became this powerhouse. And it's really cool to see that come out of Spokane, Washington.
For a small school, for a small university, they throw off a great basketball team every year, don't they?
They really do. Mark Few is just, I've heard nothing but good things about him from the time I went to school to now, where he is just supposedly a really, really good guy and has a really high basketball IQ and just, you know, doesn't let them get away with things. I think part of the appeal with Spokane for diehard basketball players is there's not all the distractions of L.A. or certain cities.
Good point.
There's not a big nightlife scene. You know, it's like it's not a party town.
All right, stay with us, Dan. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and get into these stories you've been covering on Scared to Death, the podcast, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dan Cummings with us, of course. Dan, of all these stories we're going to talk about tonight, what percent do you believe or not believe?
I guess probably I truly believe a small percentage, maybe 5-10%.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the day, honestly, you know?
Yeah, I mean, me too.
During the day when the sun's out, and in a more, I don't know, scientific frame of mind or something, sometimes it feels like a pretty small percentage. And then sometimes when I wake up in the middle of the night and things feel a little weird around me, it feels like it's 90% of the story still true.
You have talked about something that not a lot of people talk about, and I'm impressed with this, because years ago over the skies of St. Louis, the U.S. military dropped chemicals on people to test them.
Yes.
Toxic chemicals.
Yes, yes. That was Operation like LAC, Large Area Coverage. Yeah, it was one of many, you know, horrible things that definitely happened and that we know about because of congressional testimony and declassified documents that we covered in this one episode of Time Suck. And it just that episode really changed me. I was pretty skeptical about certain claims about the government being nefarious, and then I just came across that, you know, operations like that and Mockingbird and some of these and little known ones like Sea Spray, where they sprayed the San Francisco Bay with this biological weapon.
Jeez.
I mean, a low grade biological weapon, but it definitely happened. And at least one person definitely died. That's pretty serious, you know, to attack U.S. citizens with an experiment, a dangerous experiment they don't tell anybody about.
That's crazy stuff. In 1976, didn't they sterilize Native American women, about 3,000 of them?
Yes, yeah, unknowingly. You know, they thought they were just going in for some other kind of checkup, and yeah, they gave them hysterectomies without asking if that was
why.
Okay. I mean, right, exactly. Why? Why would they do that? Why would? I mean, I'm sure it was some kind of experimentation. Some of these things, they'll declassify some of the information. I doubt we'll know everything, but kind of like the Tuskegee experiment. You know, sometimes they do just use people as guinea pigs.
True. It's truly crazy. It really is. Every November, we talk about the JFK assassination. It's a story that should not go away. And give me your thoughts on that one.
I just think, you know, that there is just motive there. What gets me about the JFK assassination is that, you know, if you look at all the pieces where the CIA was formed specifically to, you know, create covert operations to protect, you know, American interests, which is kind of subjective what those interests, you know, tend to be, and to have plausible deniability in the Oval Office. They didn't have to tell anybody what they were doing. And then quickly with the Cold War, you know, they start, you know, doing these assassination operations. They become specialists in, you know, political assassinations. They do it in Central America, in Southeast Asia.
They tried to get Castro. They definitely tried to get him.
Yeah, multiple times, blatantly tried to get Castro and did get other leaders and, you know, people running for elections. And then I think Americans sometimes will think like, yeah, but they wouldn't do that to us. Well, you know, Kennedy, he wanted to de-escalate Vietnam very early on. That doesn't make the, you know, military industrial complex happy. To me, it always comes back to money. He's going to, you know, cost a lot of people a lot of money by pulling out of that military conflict. He was, you know, pro-union. He had made a lot of enemies with, you know, industrialists. And he made a lot of enemies with the CIA, where he wanted to dismantle the CIA. You know, that famous quote, I want to scatter them into a million pieces. And when you take on a beast like that at the height of its power, a beast that, you know, could really truly believe that they're doing the best thing for America by strengthening the military-industrial complex. I mean, they were so worried about the Red Spread. They were so worried that if they had somebody who didn't truly fear communism in the White House, that, you know, that America could become a communist nation. They could be right at our door. It would spread up to Mexico and to Canada, and it would surround us. And I think that there is, you know, a way for them to rationalize, we're doing this for the good of America. We're taking this guy out to save capitalism, to save freedom. I just feel like there's so much motive with them, with that assassination.
And they cut a deal with the mob.
Right. Yeah, but it's known that they work with the mob. And the CIA, you know, it's like even studying more recent things, like the drug lords, you know, like, the Sinaloa cartel and the Medellin cartel, you know, going back to Colombia and Mexico. It's known that government agencies like the DEA and sometimes also the CIA will choose one cartel and be like, okay, we're going to give you immunity if you help us take out these other cartels. Like, they will work with, you know, known criminals. They've done it the whole time they've been around. And they were working with the mob and then Jack Ruby and his connection. I mean, there's just so many things there that I just think they had to have had a hand in it. I just don't think that Oswald could have acted alone.
And these are some of the stories you talk about on many of your podcasts. You've got four ongoing podcasts?
There's we do three in-house, and then I just do kind of a little mini one for podcasts, which is fun. But, yeah, we do one Is We Dumb, and that's just kind of a silly, goofy, joking about, you know, kind of nonsense, kind of escapism. And then Scared to Death is my paranormal one with my wife, and then Time Suck is the one where we do deep dives on subjects like that.
Let's dive into the paranormal. Your interest in the paranormal, Dan, fascinates me because you really get into it in a big way.
Well, we get so many fan stories sent in of things that, I mean, we've had over 100, and I just think they can't all not be true. And I've talked to so many people, and actually, we just told one that I don't even know if it came out. We recorded it already, but it blew me away. It happened in 1977. I can't believe I'd never heard of it. But Teresita Basa, this Filipino woman in Chicago, and she gets murdered, and she's living alone. And the main piece of evidence investigators find in her apartment, basically the only piece of evidence, is this thing, theater tickets for AS, these initials. They have no idea who AS is. And they have no suspects. They don't understand who would want this 47-year-old, really nice woman dead. I mean, her body was found nude. It was pretty horrific. And then all of a sudden, months later, the investigators get a call from another police precinct. Hey, you should go talk to this doctor. And they go talk to this doctor, and this is months later, and he's really nervous, and he says, do you believe in the paranormal? And they're like, oh, great. This lead's going to go nowhere. And then he proceeds to tell them that his wife was having these intense nightmares. Now, his wife had met Teresita once, but they were not friends. No one thinks they knew each other. And he said one night his wife went into a trance. A voice overcame her that was a voice he had never heard come out of her before. She claimed to be Teresita Basa, and she named her killer, and the name fits AS, the initials. And, you know, and said, like, I want you to go to the police, and I want you to tell the police what I've just told you, and then goes away. Well, he's very skeptical. He doesn't do anything. A week goes by. She goes into this trance again, and it's angry now, this voice. And says, why didn't you talk to the police? Why didn't you tell them everything that I just told you? You know, and it's Alan Showery was the name. And then this voice, this woman who had only barely met Teresita in life, goes on to perfectly explain the crime scene that was never released to the public. And she says, he stole jewelry from me after my murder. He gave the jewelry to his girlfriend. And four people know about this jewelry, gave names and phone numbers. And the police didn't even know that jewelry was taken. They go investigate Alan Showery because they had no other leads, take him down to the station. When they have him to the station, they go, send an officer back to talk to his girlfriend. She had that jewelry on her. They called the four numbers. They all matched the names. All four of those people said, yep, that's the jewelry that belonged to Teresita. And then when they confronted Alan Showery with this, this ghost evidence, he broke down and confessed. And you know, numerous Fantastic. Interviews in the Chicago Tribune and Boston, you know, they just said over and over, there's no way this person could have known any of those details. There's just no way.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, not only to me, cemented that the paranormal exists, but that ghosts specifically exist and can come back. I just don't know how else to explain it.
Sometimes I talk to psychics who work with law enforcement, but in the beginning, when they were just starting off, they would know things about where the body was, how it was put down, and things like that. And I said, did they ever think of you as a suspect? And most of them say all the time, until they got to know who we were, they would always think this person might have been involved in this thing.
Right. And that's what I thought with this Teresita Bassa story.
Yep.
But the guy confessed he didn't even know, because they didn't tell him the name of the woman who had the trance and the name of the doctor. And he never named them. So, like, there was no reason for him not to name them. You know, you'd think he'd want to get a plea deal or something. And, stories like that, you find that story, and then you find another story that's similar. And I just think they just can't be fake. Some sure can be, but not all of them.
We're with Dan Cummings. His podcast is called Scared to Death. Is it safe to still call you a comedian? Is that fair?
Well, with COVID, I haven't done stand-up in 50 months, and I'm really into podcasts.
Oh, my God.
It feels like former comedian.
Good for you. Tell us about the story of Ernie Rivers, a poltergeist story.
Yeah, so this Ernie Rivers, they called it the Project Poltergeist, and I had never heard of this story and just came across it on the web, you know, doing lots of digging. And I just couldn't believe – it's just one of those where there's so many witnesses. And basically, this kid living out in Newark, New Jersey, in this Felix Fold housing development, things just start happening around him. He's living there with his grandma. His mom had sadly actually killed his father and then got arrested, went to jail, and then he's living with his grandma. And he's kind of a quiet kid. And all of a sudden, the grandma starts to notice, like, you know, things will fall off the counter, near him. Maybe at first she thinks it's him doing it. And then her friends start to come over. Like, she starts to get a little spooked. And pretty soon, multiple people are watching light bulbs unscrew themselves at a lamp.
Oh, my God.
Watching things get thrown across the room. Pretty soon, the director of the housing project comes over. He checks it out. He was very skeptical, kind of made fun of her at first. And then he sees some of these things. And then numerous police officers. That's what always killed me. We've come across several of those now, and this is one of them, where the police will write in their police report, "We don't know how else to explain this. You know, we saw this object move itself across the room." And it just went on for months. And again, those are the ones that really get me, where there's so many witnesses, and none of them gained anything from this. And actually, at this time when this happened, it was 1961 is when it started. Ernie's grandma was very, very scared for this to get out because of racism.
Mm-hmm.
She was worried that they would get kicked out of the housing project, and it was a really nice unit she had. And if she were to get kicked out, she didn't know where she'd live. You know, they were really, really impoverished. And so she didn't tell the media about this. They heard from other people talking about it. They investigated, and the story broke that way.
Uh-huh. And then it went all over the place.
Yep, and then it went all over the place, and then the housing director got involved, and then the police got involved, and then a bunch of paranormal investigators got involved, you know, parapsychologists from Duke University. Everybody saw things they just couldn't explain. And I just liked that she wasn't trying to be famous. She didn't sell a book later. She never made any money off of any of this.
We've got a lot of listeners in Canada, Dan, and you have some information about a strange paranormal activity in St. Catharines in Ontario.
That was on the Church Street is where that happened. Similar time period, about 10 years later, 1970 was that one. And it's multiple police officers on Church Street. I'm trying to remember the exact address.
237. 237. I got notes from your work.
237 Church Street, apartment 1. Yeah, St. Catharines, Ontario, and it was, you know, people hearing weird noises, scratching in the walls, you know, this kid got, like, thrown off of a chair. That actually happened in front of an officer. This guy wrote on February 10th in the police report, "While I was there, I witnessed some phenomenal occurrences, which I have attached to this report. After witnessing unusual things taking place, I contacted Mr. Bradley, the building inspector. We both agreed the causes were in no way connected to the building structure itself. My only solution to these occurrences is that the boy Peter, whom all these occurrences surround, has been inhabited by a spirit of a poltergeist." That's him writing that in the police report. He said, "I witnessed the boy being thrown on at least a dozen occasions, including while I was there with Officer Crawford." And then Officer Crawford would later back this up. And this didn't help their police careers. to say, we have no other explanation other than poltergeist activity for this boy being, like, thrown around the room, for things moving around the room, for, you know, strange noises occurring in the building. And that's come up in several stories. And I just think, you know, why would you do that if it wasn't true? Why would you risk your career? Why would you risk public mockery?
Right, exactly. And even in those days, pilots were afraid to tell UFO stories. Now they're pretty open. But in those days, I mean, they would not, they would deny things that they saw.
Right, right. Because they didn't want, and I understand it. I don't blame them. Where, you know, they have their retirements to look forward to. They, you know, got a good job. And they didn't want to get labeled as a, you know, a quack or the equivalent of that, or a crackpot, or whatever the term was at the time.
Dan, we're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about some UFO stories. I want to get your take on that. Plus, we'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to talk about your paranormal activity or ask Dan a question. Of course, Dan Cummings, our special guest, his podcast is called Scared to Death. Give it a listen. I think you'll like it. And we will be back in a moment. Don't forget to subscribe to our free YouTube channel. Simply go to YouTube.com. Up in the search bar, type in Coast to Coast AM Official. It's got to be that way or you're not going to get the real one. Coast to Coast AM Official, and then just subscribe to YouTube. It's free.